Welcome to today's Case Study Museum interview, one of eight recorded for the AMM Essential Questions Program series. Over the course of this series, we're finding out how museums are faring today, 3 years after the start of the pandemic and civic unrest following George Floyd's murder. We will be chatting with eight different museums across the Midwest about what they've learned about themselves and their audiences, what changes they've made that stuck, and what new models or approaches they've tried. These interviews are talk show style, featuring guest moderators. They are pre-recorded so that you can listen to them when it is convenient, and listeners will have the opportunity to ask questions of our museum panelists during live Q&A sessions this spring, so stay tuned for that. Today's featured museum is the Freeport Art Museum in Freeport, Illinois. Today's interviewer is Bob Beatty, historian and principal at the Lyndhurst Group. And with that, I'll hand it over to Bob.
All right, y'all. Welcome today. Let's go ahead and do a quick, just an introduction so folks know who you are. We'll start with Jessica.
Hello, Jessica Modica. I am the executive director for the Freeport Art Museum, and I've been there for about 20 years.
And you've been director for about 10, it sounds like, right?
12.
12, sorry.
That's 12. Okay.
Yeah, I know, don't take any years off of that one. That's Barry. Right.
I'm Barry Troy. I'm Director of Education and Exhibitions at the Freeport Art Museum.
Excellent. And then Patrick?
Hi, I'm Patrick O'Hammy. I'm the Chair of Studio Art at the University of Illinois. I'm a visual artist, and I'm a co-author of the BIPOC Initiative at the Freeport Art Museum.
Fantastic. Thanks, y'all, for joining us today. And really, I think we're going to talk about two things. The first thing we're going to do is sort of frame where we are today in the new normal and the adjustments the institution has made with the pandemic. We're about to start our fourth year with the COVID virus sticking around. Things have changed drastically, but nowhere near what happened 3 years ago when we sort of stepped into this. So really, if you can, you know, how did the pandemic impact the decisions you were making regarding this initiative and or just in general? How has this impacted you? How have y'all made some changes? Maybe found some new strengths, some new ideas, maybe get rid of some things that weren't working. You're a smaller institution, a budget of typically 250, but you're up to about 500,000 right now. Is that right, Jessica? So let's talk, let's just set the stage a little bit for pandemic, Freeport Art Museum, all of a sudden the world shuts down and we're all stuck going, what now? So what does that look like for y'all at that point?
Well, I can answer from more of an operations standpoint, and then I think Barry has some good things to add about how things have changed during the pandemic programmatically and how things look now from a program standpoint. So from more of an operations viewpoint, I can say that we're still evolving as a result of the pandemic. And the world has definitely changed as a result, and we're continuously having to make changes in response. And we were lucky that we were able to write a grant and receive a grant that allowed for some technology upgrade that allows us as a staff to better work from home. And I think that has had a pretty good impact on the way that we do our work. Today, for example, you know, prior to the pandemic, of course, none of us were Zooming in. And so that does open up quite a bit of opportunities to meet with people that we probably wouldn't be been able to get together with otherwise. But we've also experienced quite a bit of increased costs. And I know that a lot of museums, big or small, are now dealing with these increased costs, along with staff burnout is a real thing. And so we're considering making even more changes next year to help kind of alleviate some of these things that are a direct result of or started. Right. So just speaking, yeah. So one example is, you know, it's just Barry and I right now at the art museum as full-time staff. We don't have any part-time. And whereas I'm looking for another staff person or two to add, depending on budget and all of that good stuff. Staffing is hard, right now. And Barry and I really do so much. And so to try and combat some of that just overwhelming work, I'm considering maybe next year shutting the museum down in January. It doesn't mean that we'll stop working, but it allows us potentially a lot more flexibility in the way that we're able to do our work. And so creating a little bit of breathing room. And I think that we need that. So that's a change that we're considering, and it would be fairly easy for us to implement that. I'm also looking at the role of volunteers and how they play a part in the museum. We've always relied, as you can imagine, relied heavily on our volunteers. But what I've really come to learn is that volunteers are willing and able to do a lot more kind of sophisticated work than I used to give them credit for. I mean, and so there might be some, I'm looking right now at ways that potentially some volunteers could plug in some real meaningful ways, not that they didn't before. But for example, just in this last year, we have started to have volunteers staff our open hours on Saturdays. And not only does that save us a great deal of money, but it also, again, allows us, Barry and I, not to have to staff the weekend hours. And so far that has been going really, really well. So those are just a couple of examples of some of the changes that we've either already done or we are considering doing in the future.
And I'm hearing you say that the pandemic gave you an opportunity to rethink this model. Whereas mm-hmm. before, and I know this from experience, when you're at a museum of your size with a staff of your size, you're just constantly running around in that wheel just to keep the doors open. And so you've been able to stop and take a breath and do that. So then Jessica, you had previewed Barry talking about it in terms mm-hmm. of programs and exhibitions and stuff. How did this big change manifest itself with y'all then?
Yeah, it was really interesting because one day we're open and the next day, we have to close. And there was a little, okay, what do we do? And what it opened up was that whole thing. We got out the video camera. And it also strengthened our relationship with one of our collaborators at Boys and Girls Club, because at the Boys and Girls Club, a lot of those kids would get a meal before they went home. And so during the shutdown, they were starting to take meals to their homes. Well, I was making these online videos of craft and activities that the kids could do at home with simple materials. And we turned them into brown bag art projects that people could come to. We would make a lot of bags, set them on the front porch of the museum, and they could come up and get them without entering the museum, take them home, and then they could look at a video online of what to do. And so we started sending those along home with the kids with their meals at the Boys and Girls Club. So it was a way we worked together to continue a program, which was our Smart After School program. And we would go to different schools after school and do art projects with the kids, get extracurricular art projects that programming that they normally wouldn't get. So it kind of, within a week, we turned and did that. And I think there was also, it's not separate from that, when we had the George Floyd murder, and all of that was going on in the discussion and talk and everything like that, that all kind of played into, you know, thinking about what next.
So that is an excellent segue into because something that Patrick said early on, there's joy. You found joy in the difficulty. And so as I've recounted these stories of the shutdown and the pivot that museums made online, I'm remembering those moments in my own life. I wasn't at a museum, but I was working with my colleagues and listening and trying to share these good ideas. But out of this, did this BIPOC initiative that you lead, Patrick, come out of the pandemic, or was this something y'all were working on and has kind of paralleled the journey? And really, as I start with that question, then I say, I do want you to talk about the joy and difficulty. I think that is a really great way to frame that moment, or at least for me, it is. It's a good way for me to sort of start, listen, and bounce some questions off there.
Yeah. Okay. Were you asking me or Patrick?
Let me just talk with Patrick for a sec, and then we'll back up on the other side. Because we'll start with that, and then we'll work back there.
Okay.
Yeah. So to answer your question of was it in progress or like when did it develop? Barry and I began talking probably late 2020. So it was in the wake of George Floyd's murder and in the midst of the confusion and fear that the pandemic was settling in on many of us. And I'll let Barry go into more about what inspired him to reach out and what his initial thoughts were. But I was at a place where I was desperately looking for joy. Some of my work was beginning to change because of the realities that we were all living through. I didn't have access to my studio space. My studio space is on the campus of the University of Illinois, and that was shut down. And so I was just really trying to really think the whole practice. I found myself watching a lot of TV, Ted Lasso was helpful, but ultimately I found myself returning to a space of joy that I was, that I had as a kid, which was Soul Train. And that was a 1971 to 2006 musical variety show. And I just was transported back to my childhood, you know, and centered it in my research for months. And it was at that time that George Floyd was murdered, and the subsequent murders previous and immediately after, week and month after month, really just ripped me from that reverie. And when Barry reached out with his initial ideas for what would become the BIPOC initiative, like many and many artists and their relationships to museums historically, especially artists of color, we've not seen them as welcoming spaces. And so, you know, I was open to listen because I really enjoy collaborating, but I was skeptical. And it took some conversations to really find the trust and the traction to move forward. And we did. And I'll let Barry talk about how we got to that meeting point.
Okay, thank you, Patrick, because you set this up perfectly. So we've got Patrick, a visual artist, who's like a lot of us, away from the world he knows and the world that brings him joy. We've got this museum that is also looking to do more. And then we've got all this turmoil going on in America. And George Floyd was, a reckoning. Will continue to be. That work is not done. But Barry, Patrick has sort of given you the chance to sort of say, how does this discussion with Patrick begin, or this idea of how y'all are going to respond? And thank you. That's great to know. This is at the end of 2020 when you guys started talking. So we're not talking about a reaction to the immediacy of the pandemic. Now we're talking about how artists and or museums and or communities are now grappling with this new normal that we have. And art, art reflects, or is how we deal with our problem. I study music. So musicians pour out their emotions with art. Artists do the same, and so do communities and visitors, whether or not they are from the community of the same artist or they are something new. So Barry, long soliloquy or long intro to let you sort of talk about this initiative. How does it get going? How do you find Patrick? How does this happen?
Well, there was a whole soup, I think, mixing up at that time. You had George Floyd's murder. We had people in the arts talking about the history of museums as a colonial institution with systemic racism in them. And then also looking around, you know, I'm concerned with all of that. I was taking an IED class at the time. And so there was a lot fermenting in me in thinking about that. So it was kind of exciting. I guess that's a kind of joy. There was an excitement there. And I was trying to figure out how this small institution plays a role in that. We have a community, I believe, Jessica, you can correct me if not, we're about 17% people of color in Freeport. I believe it's somewhere around there. When we work with the Boys and Girls Club or in aftercare, we see kids of color everywhere in all of those classes, but not coming into our museum with their families. And although there had been some people of color on our board before, it had been some time. So, you know, there's a number of things that reflected in the small institution, but all related to what was going on in the larger world. And then on top of that, you know, there was a little bit freer time when we didn't have the doors open that I could sit at my computer and start looking at artists again, too. I don't get to travel enough to visit artist studios and so on. And I ran across Patrick's work. At that time, it was these beautiful, wonderful, powerful portraits and so on. And I reached out to him and just interested at first, would he be interested in bringing this work up? And part of that was, and is something that we were discussing in the IED class too, is having art on the walls that reflect the people looking at it. And so if we want the desires to have people of color looking at art in the walls, maybe they need to see themselves in there instead of white portraits or, you know, something else that maybe doesn't reflect who they are. And so that was part of the motivation for reaching out to Patrick, just loving his work, first of all. And then we started talking about, how do we go about this and where do we need to be to get there? And, Patrick asked me about the complexion of our museum and regarding the people in it and everything. And he said, well, I cannot go any further. At some point in the conversation, I said, I can't go any further in this until some changes are made. And I said, okay, let me think about that. And I don't know, you probably thought me never to hear from me again, but I started talking and then reaching out to people in our community, the director of the Boys and Girls Club and so on, and about for, you know, recommendations for people that I might be able to draw into service. And one of the things was to create a committee of voices of color. And so we now have an exhibitions and programming committee. We have four people of color on there and two of white. And then Patrick also said, well, what about the board? and I said, okay. So we would go to, the president of the board and I said, I have somebody here that, you know, is willing to take it on. And that was Joy Sellers, and it's been good. It's been good, and even that committee has grown with some new younger blood too, which I'm very happy. So
Barry, let me
that's kind of where that.
Excellent. Let me pause you there for a second, because an artist with whom you are really familiar only with his, you know, what you're seeing online, right? You don't know him necessarily. Has said to you, hey, if I'm going to do this, and by the way, Patrick, thank you for doing that, because honestly, that's how we make change, right? You understand that. I don't need to tell you that. So Jessica, you know, set the scene here for you, because obviously this is an issue you as a director have been thinking about a lot. It's hard to make inroads. You have to be, the term I use and have used for years, you have to be very intentional about how you do it. But it's also, there's reality on the ground, which is if you don't have the audience, people of color aren't interested in even serving the institution, especially if you don't have a willingness to do that. As a young director, you have less of an understanding how to do that than a seasoned director where you are today. So Patrick has asked for some changes. Barry has come up with an idea, found a person. He's asked for some changes. You're a small staff. You can make stuff happen. But when it comes to board and advisory committees and the decisions an institution makes, that's different than you know, programming. So how do you do that? How do you do that as the director? How did that go with your with your audience, with your board, with your community?
Right. And, you know, I think the first thing that comes to mind when I'm asked that is you really just have to do it. You know, because, you know, and Barry and I have talked about this before, because like he's mentioned, we had had people on our board who are people of color, but it had been a little while. And kind of like what you said before, Bob, as far as, you know, we were oftentimes so much dealing with the day-to-day, you know, on that wheel of trying to keep things funded, trying to keep programs going, that sometimes that work of, hey, we really also need to pay attention to, you know, diversifying our board and having multiple voices be a part of what we're doing, right? It just falls to the wayside. And so when Barry approached me with some of this conversation that he was having with Patrick, it really was a moment for me to say, absolutely, absolutely, we need to do this work. We need to do this work now. We just need to do it. And so I was very supportive of Barry's ideas from the beginning. I hope I was very supportive. And doing just small things and that lead to big things. So prior to this initiative, we had approached some of this work from a more of a programmatic aspect. You know, we had worked very hard to establish and strengthen partnerships and relationships with other organizations in Freeport that did represent a more diverse part of our, you know, our whole community. Like the Boys and Girls Club, but we really hadn't taken the next step, right? To then also make sure that we, as an institution, reflected that as well. And we're still working on it. The work is not done. We need to further diversify our board. And one of the ways that I anticipate doing that is now that Barry has been able to create this exhibitions committee that is more reflective of our community. I hope to draw more people to our board directly from that committee, because they will have already been working with our institution. They know more about who we are. And Barry, I'm sure we'll talk about this more in a little bit, but there's a trust also that needs to be built there. And so there's still quite a bit of work that we need to do in building those building blocks of trust. You know, we don't want to be kind of a one and done type of thing where we're just doing this work now and then we're just going to forget about it and leave it to the wayside later. That's not what we want. That's not
because the community recognizes that, right, Patrick? Like when the one and done, y'all know, and which is probably, I'm imagining why you stood your ground. And again, Barry was very willing to do that, you know, and that's not a bad thing, right? But the community gets that. When we do these one and done, even if we're spending a lot of time with the Boys and Girls Club, which is a great way to reach audiences that we can't, it's still not enough if people don't feel included or they don't feel they belong in the walls of the institution. So I'm going to give you a spot there, Patrick, to sort of espouse on that, because I think this is something people have to understand. No matter how good the intentions of Barry and Jessica are, or Bob Beattie when he was there, there's still a whole lot that goes on, and there's a lot of watching. It's a don't tell me, show me mentality, right? So go ahead, Patrick, expound on that. I think I've given you I think you know where I'm headed.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. And what Jessica said about trust is important. And it wasn't initially a kind of demand that came from me. It grew out of Barry and I talking and hearing what he was aspiring to do. Initially, as Jessica mentioned, it was programmatic and while important, just like the programs with the Boys and Girls Club, you know, to be blunt, could just be a Band-Aid. It doesn't actually get to the structural systemic kind of groundwork that needs to happen so this can be sustained, right? And so from what I understood what Barry was talking about and aspiring to, that's when my suggestions of the board and diversity and everything came about. And
That's a good clarification. Thank you, Patrick. So you guys were speaking before you said, like, look, here's where this stops until. So that, thank you for that clarification. Continue.
Right. And when and so Barry, to his credit, you know, took those suggestions and then put the footwork in, put the groundwork in to earn the trust by showing and not telling, and then came back to me a couple months later with this in place, with these initial kind of changes in place. And that's when we began in earnest talking about, you know, okay, now that we have some structural support in place and opportunities for the community to be participant in a way that's behind the scenes, as well as what we hope is in front of the scenes within the gallery spaces, let's develop a project that can meet these challenges in a very public way, but also meet a lot of nuanced conversations that aren't always apparent. And this is why I really value Barry and Jessica trusting an artist to try to bring this perspective in, as someone who operates as, of course, an administrator and with the university as an educator, but also as an artist, in that, you know, how do we empower our community to see themselves reflected? How do we invite them in and make them feel welcomed earnestly? How do we empower our artists to feel supported, to have roots to kind of educational experiences from professionals like Barry and Jessica and their peers? How do we support them through an exhibition? And how do we provide them with an opportunity to generate community? And that's something that came out of this BIPOC initiative too, which is artists curating with the museum, other artists to be part of this. And so it becomes this kind of ongoing self-sustaining initiative that doesn't tokenize either. Because that was something that was important to us. Like, anyone involved in this initiative did not exclude them being part of other programming in the museum. Like, this is where people of color go. That was something that was not on our table. We were like, we want this to be a space that is supported, but we also are doing other types of projects and initiatives that include many different peoples that may not be associated with this, but that's important too. So we were thinking about this in all those different kind of multifaceted ways.
And, you know, I know how this goes a lot of times, Patrick, with you. You know, you're the only African-American on this call, right? So, you know, in meetings, well, like, oh, well, let's hear what Patrick has to say or something like that. But the idea that you're saying is right. You are representing that, but you are not the representative of, you have done that. So talk about what is it when I say that is it called a BIPOC initiative, the FAM, Freeport Art Museum's Black Indigenous People of Color Initiative. So what exactly is it? And then I know Barry's got some thoughts too, but what did it turn out to be then with you, Patrick? So you curated an exhibition, or you did a full exhibition, or what are we looking at?
Right. So Barry and I went back and forth to develop the language that was inclusive and thoughtful of all these nuanced narratives and histories. And so that took time to develop a kind of working document. We call it a living document that is ongoing and is flexible. And so as we see things change, as the world changes, as we become aware of things that we're not necessarily conscious of, that we can be adaptive, that the document can be adaptive. So that was the first step, is developing kind of language around what this is. And what it became,
a framework,
right? And what that framework became was a five-year supported project. The museum dedicated 5 years to supporting this project, where two artists would be invited in per year to exhibit, to engage with the community, and then to work with the museum to invite the next group of artists, BIPOC artists, in. And that would be self-generating for 5 years and supported in different ways through grants and through other funding. As I mentioned before, the initial artists are invited, but then those artists have a lot of agency in who will be invited next and next and next. And so it builds this community that is nationwide, but is firmly rooted in the community that's very regional right there. And so it's trying to bring these kind of conversations and have them flux between a national conversation and a very regional important conversation that's happening right at home. That's kind of the picture I have. Barry, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Barry. So Barry, how did this change from maybe what you were thinking? Because that's one of the things that's always important, right? We as educators, exhibition folks, administrators, Patrick, you know this too from being an administrator, we have an idea in our mind, And it is, it's very counter to us, I think, a lot of times, right, to see this much control. I'm actually really good. I've been really good with it from the beginning because I've seen it manifest itself like this. But you built something out of whole cloth, Barry, that has a long tail to it that should perpetuate because Patrick and the committee has helped sort of shape that. So talk about that a little bit.
Well, what to say? I know as Patrick and I were developing that document, that was a question for me. And it would just goes back to if there is systemic racism within the organization, and it's about who is showing and who is coming through the door, that has to be embodied somehow, and that would be embodied in me. I was the director of exhibitions. And so the thought was, and this came to me one night, because I would lay awake at night thinking about our conversations, and it came to me that, well, I shouldn't be doing that. Maybe it's more my role to be a facilitator. And so when Patrick would choose an artist to show along with him, that artist would also be presented to the committee to have some input over that, or you know, to have their voice. And as it's gone on now, we've realized that just because of practical matters, maybe some artists that they really want can't do it. They present two or three artists to the committee now and get the committee's input in ranking them, which ones they would prefer or think would be best to bring to the community, because we also want to think about our community. And so I'm kind of the facilitator in communication and so on, and till they kind of sift and winnow to the person that is going to be there. I guess that's how that started and developed.
I can imagine you, I know when I was in your shoes, thinking, how am I going to sustain this, right? Given the track record of the institution and everything else, but you built that into it. And then I always say, I like to teach, budgets are moral documents. So Jessica, with a 5-year commitment means you have made a 5-year kind of budgetary commitment to this, correct? Am I wrong in that? So that is, to me, an example of kind of putting your money where your mouth is. Now, we've all acknowledged the problem doesn't go away simply because we have a very successful initiative at Freeport Art Museum with this thing, but your museum is now taking a very intentional direction toward this going forward. That has changed you exponentially or as an institution. Talk a little bit about that. That's a decision. 5 years for a small museum director to be devoting something is a lot. So talk about that.
Yeah, no, it is a commitment, but it is something that I knew and Barry knew that was a really important element of making this success, because we'd seen it before. With our partnership with the Boys and Girls Club, we were told, early on in that partnership that they had a lot of organizations approach them in the past wanting to do programs and everything, and they would come in and it would be very much a what I said before, one and done. They'll do a program and then they're gone. And so they're not interested in that, and I don't blame them. And so when Barry came to me and was discussing, you know, the commitment aspect, you know, I understood right away that was a very necessary and important part of the initiative. For me, as the administrator, the one that's in charge of the budget and finding the budget, I understood that meant that it would dictate my activities in grant writing and fundraising, but also very willing to take that on. You know, it has just, you know, in the last year, we have come to the realization that we'll need to make some changes, because unfortunately what I'm seeing in the grant world right now is that, you know, following in the wake of the George Floyd's murder, there was all kinds of funding Available for not only the DEI training, but also programs. But what I noticed was granting organizations really expected organizations to do these programs immediately. Like you had a 6-month window to qualify for those grants and then spend that money. And now what I'm seeing is that money is gone. There are not as many funders out there now for these types of ongoing initiatives. And so it's a struggle, but you know, I'm very committed. We all, the board as well, remain committed to this work. So one thing that we will have to change, though, is probably our scope, as far as we would love to continue to engage with artists on a more national level. The real and hard truths of affording that are you know, something
coming
that we
into, coming into focus for you now. So, you know, as institutions, as an administrator, as director, like it's all about more than just priority, but also feasibility, sustainability of the initiative and stuff like that. And you've mentioned, I mean, you know, funders. I saw Patrick make a knowing nod when you were mentioning that, you know, they expect to throw money at a problem and solve it. The number of institutions, well, let's bring in a DEI consultant, right? And no, you're not solving this. And one thing, so you put the systemic is actually the right word, right? But you put it in the system. Budgets are moral documents. And figuring out how you adapt to this situation sounds to me is one of those things you're working on and what your plan is to continue this.
Yeah. You know, in fact, in the middle of the pandemic, I was in a position where I had to turn away money that was earmarked for this type of initiative, even though we were, Barry and Patrick were right in the middle of creating it and crafting it. But I went back to that funder and I said, we're not ready. We really need this to be something that has meat on the bones, you know, so to speak. And we can't write that grant right now because we don't know what it looks like yet. Well, you know, and then that I had to just pass on that grant. The other thing, you know, too, that the other thing that is kind of tied to that, though, that Barry and I are talking about a lot, and I love our conversations about this, is you know, we also realize that, you know, we do need community input. And he's done just an incredible job of establishing the committee. But we're also now looking at ways to involve the interests of more of our community persons of color. So bringing in the histories, the local history of persons from our community. And we don't know what that's going to look like yet. We're just, you know, we're talking about it. And so that too, I believe will lead to some more support financially as well.
I will say, you know, just go on the record a little bit. Funders are a challenge for us always. They always have been. And I do pay attention to those, and it's worth it that are paying more attention to these types of issues from a more systemic thing. We have this mindset that we're going to throw money at problems and fix them, and relationships, and it takes time. It's not as easy as turning on a switch, as we know from the pandemic as we go through. Barry, did you, I think I cut you off on the last one. Did you have anything else kind of on those lines, or any additional thoughts regarding that?
I don't know. I guess the thing that comes to my mind is what is the effect of all of this in reality? We have good openings, a good diverse crowd. I think it's about half and half, I think, at yours, Patrick, if we were, and the second one was the same way. I think what is neat is when the kids come into the museum for the tours of these shows, they are seeing artwork by artists of color with images of people of color. And that wasn't there before. So that is incredible. You know, and then even in this last one, Anika couldn't be there to talk to the students. She did a they did a wonderful video talking about their work, and it was terrific. And the kids were going around through the exhibit, listening to that. So that is something quite different. And hopefully that grows, and that every exhibition opening is that diverse. We're not, like Jessica said, we're not there yet. And something this serious and important, it doesn't get solved in a second.
Patrick, right, you've just unmuted. Go for it.
Yeah, you talked really well about relationships, and that's what this is. Like, relationships take time, they take trust, they take investment, they take consistency. And, when the museum invited me to be the inaugural artist, that wasn't something I set up to do. I didn't help co-author this so I could show my work. You know, I'm in a place in my career where, you know, I have shows and I have traction and I get out there. I wanted to do it because I believe in the project. And it was also a great opportunity to continue working out some of the bugs of what this process is going to look like, which Barry and Jessica and even myself, you know, we stay in conversation. It's not, I'm not one and done. So we've been in conversation about how to continue sharpening and shaping and opening this project as it goes forward. But one highlight of mine, in addition to just showing, was speaking with the local, I believe it was it the middle school or the middle school and high school came together. It was at the Jeanette Lloyd Theater. And that was amazing. The principal trusted me to come in. They didn't know who I was, I don't think, and let me talk to the students and share my work with them. And yeah, seeing the students excited about the work, seeing them come up to you afterward and talk about their work and share with you about that, to hear the stories of them coming into the exhibition space and seeing the artwork. I mean, museums are our cultural institutions. They hold our stories and our values. And if you don't see that in those spaces, that's violent. And so being able to come in and see artwork and see artists and see reflections of yourself, to be able to study and create projects and crafts and collaborations through your teachers, your professors, your parents, and build knowledge from the knowledge you're seeing in these spaces, that's huge. And so, you know, as I know it's a struggle and an ongoing effort to continue building these relationships, but, you know, and I don't presume to ask the question of like, how's it going so far, because we're still only in the middle of it, right? But I am really excited to see how this is reverberating out, and even the things that don't become very apparent immediately might have effect. There might be a young person 15 years from now that comes back and they're a 20 something year old person being like, that was changed my life, or that gave me confidence to pursue this, or hey, maybe when that person is, you know, 34 years old, they want to donate back to the museum. You never know, right? And that or is
get involved with their community and their museum and their local community. That you've nailed a really important part, Patrick, about access and inclusion and belonging, that I think is really vital for us all to understand. And I'll say this to the, you know, sort of as a sum up to the audience as well, but we measure in museums by attendance at events or at things like that. But the fact of the matter is we can't measure what impact we can, but it's really hard, but what impact it has on an individual person. And frankly, more than that, we won't know if there's a 15-year-old kid who goes on to be inspired by this. I went to a museum at 12, and the guy told me about being a museum director, and I didn't have any idea that there was such a thing or I could do that, right? I'm not saying it inspired my career, but where I ended up, I thought about it. And I think it's the same thing. And by the same token, I wanna say, like you said, museums hold this cultural heritage. They present it by being inclusive or showing more of a story. What we're doing is telling a better story, or a more inclusive, but lowercase I, right? A story that tells more vantage point. And everybody learns, not just the people of color who walk in to see your exhibition, but I learn because you have bared your soul to me through art, and or an institution has chosen to show artifacts or tell stories regarding that. Like I think that what I'm hearing y'all say, or at least understand, is number one, this works across the board. The second thing is success isn't measured by exhibit openings or by attendance, unfortunately, right? And we have to sit there and Jessica, you have to prove this to funders, you have done something. And Barry, you've got to answer to your director and the board about this, but the bottom line is the work we're doing. Well, let's say it this way. I think your institution is 50 years old, what year were y'all founded? 75-ish? Is that right? Okay, I got it almost right. So you're talking about a 50-year history that is on top of another 150 years of issues with museums and institutions, right? Your own institution, it's going to take a really long time to see those results. But the fact of the matter is what I'm hearing everybody say is this partnership in inclusion has increased this kind of sense of belonging. Certainly, Patrick, I can tell you feel very, you know, much a part of this institution, and you are an advocate at this point. And from your position at the university, you obviously have some gravitas in this that people are going to listen. So you know, that is a part of it too there. Audience, go ahead, Barry, please.
Well, if I might add, I mean, yes, it's going to take some time, but I think we have to, like, well, Patrick's favorite word, joy, take some joy in some very things that were strengthened, the relationships with people of color between the museum, between ourselves, really. We're a small community, so they know my name and they know Jessica's name. And, you know, I think we've got more people we can go to and talk to and include going forward and ask questions and ask for help as we go forward, because it wasn't like it is now. It is better in terms of that level of communication and trust building. I think we feel more trust, and I hope it's two ways. I think it is. As they said before, James Ryan from the Boys and Girls Club, you know, we built a trust there because we kept on coming back year after year after year. And I think that was why doing at least for 5 years, this was so important in this too. You know, not everything is as best as I envisioned, you know, but, you know, I think it's continued that trust building. And I think we feel better in a very real sense.
It's I think you're at that right. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and get started without trying to get everything figured out, which is tough, I think, from an institutional perspective when resources are tight, et cetera. But
it might have been even easier being a small institution. Maybe we're able to pivot. We don't have to go through three or four different committee meetings to make a decision.
That's true. I was going to say that too. Smaller institution. I've really, really enjoyed working for a smaller institution because we do tend to be more nimble, as I like to say. You know, our board, you know, really is supportive of what we want to do and the things that we find important. And there's a lot of trust there. And so if there is something that we want to do like this, they're usually 110% behind us.
And it sounds like it was a successful strategy. I mean, Patrick's here giving his time to talk more about this. So obviously he's pleased with that work. And, you know, the sum total of this for me, just thinking about it overall is you guys have given a little bit of a model for how to sort of navigate these waters and for the rest of us. And I think that you've talked about not only the need, but also the desire to be inclusive and create this sense of belonging. And you've done that through this initiative. And it actually has borne some fruit, even if it's slow going in terms of how the tickets come through and those things. So final quick question, I guess, and we're a little bit tight on time. I was going to say one of the things that I heard Jessica mention, which I think is something to really think about. It sounds like this was pretty volunteer led to a certain extent. The advisory committee, or are you paying your advisory committee?
No, they're all unpaid. So yeah, the exhibition committee is an all volunteer, as is our board.
So they are what you have done at this point, it sounds to me, is you have turned over some of the big decisions to volunteers, and they've done the work there. And that is how many small museums get stuff done is we don't use volunteers to run the gift shop or to stuff envelopes, but actually use their talent to do some things that we can't do ourselves with small staff. If people are willing to donate their time, you know, that's a big part of it. But that sounds like one of the things you're still thinking about is how to sort of expand the model a little bit here. Institutional sustainability remains pretty important. Well, I'm going to wrap up and say thanks to each of you. I'll turn it back over to Charity and appreciate really your insights, your thoughts, and your willingness to talk about these things very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. We appreciate it.